there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
And welcome to the near post. We are talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network. I'm Nick Cumston, and with me in the show this week we've got Nick Ames.
Hey, good to be here, Nick. How are you?
And we've got special guest Peter Fennell. How are you, Pete?
I'm fine, Phyllis.
So, big show this week, despite, you know, we're a month into the off-season and still plenty of stuff to talk about. For the housekeeping out of the way, if you've got an inquiry or you'd like to tell us how much you like the show and test our football knowledge, you can email us on nearpostradio@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can catch the podcast on www.nearpost.blogspot.com or on iTunes or Halftime Heroes. Now, show dedication this week, and this one goes out, well, it seems a bit egotistical to have a dedication that includes myself, but it's to the Canberra A-League Foundation members this week who found out that they'd either be getting their $200 back or had the option of donating the money for the development of elite men's football here in the nation's capital. How do we feel about that, gents?
Oh, I wasn't signed up because, well, I'm a uni student. $200 is a lot of money for me. But
yeah, that's 2 weeks' worth of beer and pizza, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Obviously it's very disappointing that they've finally thrown in the towel on getting an A-League bid up in the foreseeable future. But, yeah, hopefully in the long run it'll happen.
I suspect we could do the rest of the show if we asked your opinions on this, Pete, but what's the short version?
Oh, I think the whole thing's a pretty sad and untidy experience. I think you hand the money back to the people that gave it in good faith. I'd want a lot more definition before handing over any money to Capital Football to develop elite players.
Yep. Track record doesn't speak too highly.
No, I just don't think it's the way to go. It's as tenuous and uncomfortable as the whole A-League for Canberra bit, unfortunately.
Sad to say. So for the show this week, so we've got some, going to be talking about the Socceroos, talking about some of the proposals that are being touted to reform the structure of Australian football. It could mean big changes in future. A bit of Asian Champions League, talk about the A-League. But first, let's go through all the news of the week. And this afternoon, the big news that was announced was dual international Elise Perry has been told by Canberra United that she has to choose between cricket or football or find another club. Perry, who's an Ashes-winning pace bowler, as well as representing her country at the last World Cup, has represented both sports since she was 16, but apparently the time has come where she has to make a choice which one she does full-time.
And not before time.
Yeah, well, obviously, being a dual international is a pretty hectic schedule, and look, if her club's trying to bring in a more professional environment, and the coach says, well, I want every player to be able to train every day, well, I think it's only fair that she has to make a choice.
She's a pretty, frankly, glamorous player for both. She's a fast bowler. She scored a spectacular goal in the last World Cup. She brings a lot of profile to whatever sport. Is there any doubt which sport we'd like her to choose?
No. I'd like to see her playing football because I think she's a darn good footballer. And I guess the cricketers think the same way about her bowling. But look, to be honest, in speaking to Klimkova, Canberra United's coach last season and this coming season, the rules were laid down very clearly to Perry, is my understanding, and she wasn't required to be at every training, but there was a minimum number of training sessions, and it seemed that most of the time she made them. But when it got to those critical finals games, she waved goodbye to Canberra United and said hello to Australian cricket. I mean, too many's dog watched that. Well, that's a bit harsh,
perhaps. It's a bit harsh. Reports from Italy are saying that Melbourne Victory have offered World Cup, shall we call him World Cup villain, Fabio Grosso, a 2-year contract. The Victory have also been linked with Cesena defender Vangelis Morales, who would be the first Greek player to play in the A-League.
It's an interesting ploy. I don't think he'd be much of a crowd drawer unless people wanted to throw stuff at him. However, if...
Big Italian and Greek community in Melbourne.
I do think that I shouldn't be questioning Ange Postecoglou in the transfer market. So I'm going to say he could go either way.
We've been down this road before. It wasn't productive. Melbourne Heart have re-signed Clint Bolton for 2012-13, which on the goalkeeper roundabout, that means... seems to make it certain that Ante Kovac will sign with the new West Sydney franchise.
Yeah, be hard to lose Bolton, though, wouldn't it?
You'd think so. And there's certainly no obvious backup at Melbourne Heart, from what I've seen.
No, I don't think Bolton's missed a game for like the last two seasons. Right. So
he's missed a reliable.
He's been in great form. So keep going.
Ante Kovac Melbourne's best player this year?
Probably. I think he was. The most consistent, Hernandez and Kuehl had flashes of brilliance, so did Thompson, but definitely Kovac was the foundation of the team.
Speaking of the new West Sydney team, they've been linked this week with former Socceroos midfielder Milos Jojovski, who's apparently not particularly happy with his current club in China and looking for a return to the A-League. And for some more news, the Melbourne Heart are dragging their feet on releasing Ante Milicic to join West Sydney and have demanded 3 months' notice before they allow him to join the new club.
How many miles on the clock have these guys got?
Don't know.
It's a tough ask, this Western Sydney gig, isn't it?
It's a lot to start from scratch. From the names being touted around, it looks like they'll be able to...
There's a moderate level of interest in the entire team.
Yeah.
But whether they can get it all together in time in an affordable manner as well, because I'm assuming that's what the FFA are doing.
Well, apparently they'll only spend up to 85% of the salary cap this year, but there's not... The players I've seen, you wouldn't think that...
They'd fit in 85% of the salary cap.
Well, possibly not, unless they're getting them at cut price rates, but... Yeah. They're not exactly names to get the blood racing, either, for me.
I wonder.
Speaking of blood racing, Nick, Central Coast have announced that they've kept both Tom Rogic...
and Patrick Zwanzwijk.
Patrick Zwanzwijk. Fine Canberra product.
I'm so glad we've tied down Rogic. After losing Amini back to Dortmund, I was really hoping that we could keep Rogic, and managing to get him there is just great. He's... definitely going to be like the mainstay of the attacking trident. Hopefully he keeps his form from his first few games of last season. He tailed off a bit towards the end, but he's definitely got a bright future in the A-League.
Got some talent.
Oh, he's a terrific player. You know, the thing that struck me is when he came back from the Nike Challenge, he linked up with Belconnen here, and of course he was imperious. When he went to Central Coast Mariners, and obviously then he took a bit of time to make his way to the first team, he was playing like he was playing at Belconnen, just as imperious. They started to pay attention to him, and that's another thing he's got to come to grips with now, but what a player.
Well, it's definitely good to see a young player take his chance with both hands.
Oh, yeah, terrific. But can I just say, a lot of people put a lot of work into young Rogic, and... one of those people shouldn't be forgotten, and that's John Mitchell, who had the ANU program when it was in the Premier League. Did a lot for him. So just thought I'd say that, but and I'm sure that Rogic would acknowledge him, but plenty of others too, but just goes to show that to get one player through, and can anyone really think of anyone just in the immediate past? A lot of work goes into that one, getting that one player out.
Yep. Newcastle Jets have confirmed the signings of veteran English striker and attacking midfielder Mitch Cooper. Bridges has re-signed for another season while Cooper joins the Jets on a two-year deal, apparently turning down an approach from Melbourne Victory.
Yeah, well, Michael Bridges is an interesting signing, especially after they let go of Jeremy Brockie. But I guess he is a big part off the field as well as on the field, with being... is he vice-captain or captain? I'm not quite sure. But and then Mitch Cooper, youngest captain in the A-League.
Yeah, I really hope he gets the chance to be famous for something other than Clive Palmer's shenanigans, because he's a good young kid from what I hear. He's from Vanuatu, which is a pretty unusual background. He's done well.
In the youth league as a 17-year-old as well.
Yeah, for the playing youth league, he's played young Socceroos. I'd really like to see him get a go. Aussies abroad now. The Alex Brosk is aiming to extend his stay in Japan, as he sees it as the best way for him to remain a part of Socceroos coach Holger Rosick's World Cup plans. The striker, who scored 2 goals against Saudi Arabia in February, has been a standout for 4th-place J-League club Shimizu S-Pulse this season.
Yeah, he's got 4 goals in some of the 11 games so far this season, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when his team's only scored 15 in the 12 in the 11 games that he's played, that's a fairly good effort. I only realised that he's still only 28, so he'll just be just touched 30 when 2014 rolls around, so maybe his form can continue and he'll be there.
Mm. That's maturing age for footballers at the pro level from 25 onwards.
Mm.
He's got miles on the clock if he's playing well.
Certainly by the standards of this current Socceroos squad as well.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. So moving on to the discussion topics this week, the first topic is the Socceroos, and looks like they're going to have a fairly challenging friendly against Denmark this weekend. We've talked before on the show that Aston Villa's Chris Hurd has already been ruled out with an ankle injury. Adam Federici won't be able to play, and they've called in Mitch Langerak into the squad to replace him. Mm. Brett Holman's in doubt for this match, and also the June 8 World Cup qualifier in Oman because of the expected arrival of his child. Mm. Carl Valeri and Josh Kennedy are going to miss the Denmark game as well because of club commitments. So we've got a pretty close to full strength team, which Chris Hurd's yet to debut, so it's hard to say that he'd be a first team guy.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Schwartz is still the number one keeper. Brett Holman for me is the one I don't think we could afford to lose.
Yeah, Holman and Valeri are probably going to be the main players that we'll miss. I mean, Valeri's been pretty much one of the starters in the midfield. Kennedy could be a big difference, but I think this sort of match might favour Alex Brosk more than a Josh Kennedy.
Look, I've got to say, I like Brosk.
He's been in very good form for the last.
I'm not objective about Brosk. Few matches. I like the way he plays.
I like him off the bench, I've got to say.
He's in a good impact play.
National teams need those guys who can come off the bench, and it was something I enjoyed a lot about our 2006 campaign was that when Gus Hiddink decided it was time to go for it, he'd clear out the bench and we'd have 4 guys up front.
Yeah, and coaches at this level, your bench has got, you've got to be able to influence the game decisively. Mm. If you've got people parked on the bench who are just like for like. Mm. You've not done yourself any favours.
Yeah, exactly. And the striking depth, I think it's improved a little bit with Alex Brox who's playing well. Robbie Cruz has done some good things for the Socceroos. Sort of, it's not as reliant on guys like Timmy Cahill anymore.
No.
What's the situation with him? I mean, is he going to play or not play?
Tim Cahill? I'm not quite sure, actually.
Nor am I.
I mean, he's come back from injury and he's played most of the final few games for Everton. He had that little tiff with Kabaye, but I think he's at full fitness, and he might be an impact player off the bench as well. You never know.
Yeah, don't know, because he's had a pretty frustrating season. You'd think he'd want to have a good off-season to maybe put his name up in lights and make the club think twice about transferring him. So, predictions, guys. Denmark, bit worried about this one?
I think we're going to go down 2-1, but it's going to be a pretty close game.
Pete?
3-1.
We're going
to. Well, I don't see us winning it.
No. Well, a draw would be a good effort, but we they're coming into a huge tournament for them. We're going into World Cup qualifying, which is nothing to sneeze at, but you'd think that they'd be better placed for a good result.
Yeah, I personally would have been happier if they'd have played this game inside a glasshouse or something, you know, or perhaps in the great sandy desert, you know.
Get them acclimatised. So, moving on, the bit of news, sort of, I think it's probably fair to say, trickled out this week from the reforms that FFA are proposing for the national game through the National Competition Review, and also with the Australian Premier League concept, which is a great name. I wonder where they came up with that one.
Yeah, it's a very original name that you've used there. But yeah, it's nice that they're finally taking a look at State League football and how they can make a bridge between that and the A-League. It's probably long overdue. They should have brought it in with the start of the A-League, but yeah, better late than never, I guess.
Yeah, this is big deal, you know.
Mm.
The five core outcomes, it's the evolution of the elite player pathway, the definition of competition windows and participation requirements to various things, and the introduction of an elite club licensing program. Mm. And then, I reckon it's really a hot-button issue. Well, if we're only looking at our own backyard, but it will be for every state. The introduction of the player points system.
Yes.
Wow.
That's been
the most debated feature of it. Assigning of each player a value, and then clubs have to get their squad under the salary cap, or the points cap. It's kind of like fantasy football is what I've seen it as.
I know of it working in an AFL context, that the state leagues there assign points, so clubs can't have too many, you know, high-profile players. But it's controversial. There's a lot of arbitrary judgment involved.
Well, I'll tell you what. I guess each member federation is going to implement these things in their own fashion. I mean, they've clearly got to implement them.
Yeah.
And if we only look at the ACT, where we come from, we're not a particularly big Premier League competition here, but how are we going to implement it?
Mm.
We're going to set some sort of moratorium on where players really come from and how many points they accrue and so on. You know, this is a very tricky and new business.
Mm. It's not easy. And what do we think about the proposed, well, they've certainly raised the issue around... junior fees being too high, and those fees being used to pay for senior player salaries, which is a very controversial issue. Do you think this is something that's going to be addressed through this?
Well, I'm not really sure. The FFA have said they're not going to try and, you know, moderate player payments, but they're going to try and just have them reported so they can, you know, at least get them on the books. I'm not really sure how exactly they're going to do that, because a lot of stuff can be done under the table. Let's just put it out there.
Well, this is a problem the PFA had, trying to get involved with the state league competitions. I mean, most of this stuff was under the table and in brown paper bags. But it's clear that from the report, and it's one of the reasons they ran this review, is their concern for the unsustainable player payments at state league levels.
Mm.
We're really talking about Premier League here.
Mm.
Can I just say, if we look at the ACT, I'm struggling to think of a club at the junior level that's propping up with player payments any of the Premier League players in our system here.
Mm.
I guess maybe. There's a couple of clubs that own their own premises, so it all gets a bit fuzzy there. If I pick a couple of big junior clubs, they don't hand over a wedge.
In any
significant manner.
You do hear complaints, though, that football's fees are higher than some of the comparable winter codes.
Yeah. That's an absolute correct one. And the FFA might want to look at it. Well, I'll say two things about that without dragging it out too far. The FFA gets a wedge out of that.
Mm.
For instance, our federation here, Capital Football, that's its contributions. That's its major revenue source.
Mm.
And now it covers insurance, obviously. There's a cap there, but, well, you know, it, I can't say any more than that, really, because for me, I don't think every federation, member federation, has the same problems as the biggies like Victoria or New South Wales, which may be, which is part of the criticism of the review at this point, that it's aimed up at the biggies, which I suppose it has to be anyway.
Yeah, that they're the main forces in the state.
How we
football.
Deal with it, I haven't any knows.
Because it is a very competitive landscape out there. Like we've seen, I think the value of the current AFL TV deals, $1.2 billion. The NRL, they're looking at $1 billion. So these are competitions with a lot of money to put into the battle for hearts and minds at the junior level.
Yeah, and also, if those five, those core outcomes, I reckon they're all in, some of them are interlinked, if not all. So they're talking about an elite club licensing program. So somewhere you've got some sort of quality process, and they've been fiddling with this in Victoria for a while. You get the FFA's stamp and imprimatur on your club. Then there's the revision of training compensation. So it rewards clubs which achieve accreditation. So you get accredited, you get money. Within these five core outcomes, there are some interesting linkages. This has got a fair way to go. And
it has, yeah. Look, you can see the thinking behind it.
Yeah.
Like they've got a, you know,
they've thought about it and they've said, well, this is the way we want to improve football. But it's the execution, again, that's really going to make it or break it for the FFA. They've come up with some good ideas in the past, but execution just hasn't been quite there.
No, I mean, I think they've rightly copped a lot of criticism for having their eye off the ball with the World Cup bid, that this is sort of coming back to take care of the grassroots of the game. So, yeah, stakes are high.
Well, and that evolution of the elite player pathway, so they're going to recognise the important contribution of state-based elite clubs. Address the gaps in the talented player pathway. So what they're saying is that what we've got now with the various high-performance programs in each member federation, they call them different things, plus each of the national training centres, you know, NSWIS, ACTAS, you know, SASSI, so on.
Yeah.
And then what? Well, if they don't crack it past that, then they go back into club land. But development doesn't really finish for players. Not everyone's ready at that time. So I'm guessing that they're saying that this process will now begin to tie in these, what they're calling elite clubs, accredited clubs, will start to tie them into the player development process. Well, that's an interesting one.
Well, we'll follow it with interest. So, moving on, just wanted to touch on a couple of things quickly before we finish up. So, we talked about it last week, but the Adelaide United carrying Australia's standard into the round of 16.
Yeah.
Asian Champions League tonight.
Kick off at 7:30 tonight against...
And apologies to those listening to this tomorrow.
Yeah, against Nagoya Grampus, the team that deposed my beloved Central Coast Mariners in the previous group stage. It's going to be an interesting game. I think Josh Kennedy's back to full fitness for this one. Adelaide, I think, as far as I'm aware, have a full roster. I can't imagine why they wouldn't. Obviously, it's going to be...
Well, it's not from playing a lot of games.
Yeah. So, I think home ground advantage to Adelaide, I think they might edge this one. I mean, Nagoya were good against us, but I think we were more just defensively bad. So, as long as Adelaide keep it shut, which they've done the entire group stage, they've probably got a chance of winning this one.
Pete, give them much chance?
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, I think they're playing out of their skin by comparison to some of the performances in the regular season.
Absolutely.
There seems to be a pathology to this in this Asian League thing. Mm. You know, you do all right, you qualify, get your place for the next year, and then your roster implodes, and your coaches go, all reforms. Amazing.
I know.
They're going all right.
It's inexplicable. We've long bemoaned the lack of sort of teams in form in the ACL. But then you couldn't. Adelaide would have been whatever the opposite of good form is, and yet they've sailed through qualification and have a good chance tonight.
But don't we run up short if we just do a comparison to the big clubs in Europe who have got multiple competitions going on, all high profile, and they soldier on. And
the squads are able to cope with the load.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Apparently FFA's in discussions with TV networks. Don't know who'd be interested beyond Foxtel and SBS about the FFA Cup starting next year, but that's going to be an interesting product because that'll be more games for players as well as providing a bit of a bridge with those elite Premier League clubs we've been talking about.
We've got to grab this and get it free to air, because I turned the television on the other night and I'm getting a replay of the Rugby Shoot Shield from Sydney. Isn't it possible that we could get some of these competitions up, and even if they're not necessarily put at the most favourable hour, they're out there?
Yeah,
it'd be interesting. I'd imagine it's all been tied up with the new TV deal for the A-League that they'd be wanting to package the product for, frankly, more money than what they're getting now, because it's integral to the survival of the league.
Well, yeah, and I guess I was really meaning some of the, some of the state league, the FFA Cup kind of thing.
They're saying that they might try and get the final stages of the these Australian Premier Leagues on free to air.
So they should.
It'd be interesting to see what sort of interest there would be from television stations.
I'd love to see South Melbourne playing at Bob Jane Stadium again. I'm a bit.
But we've only got to learn from the W League. The W League goes gangbusters. There's a really good reason.
Mm.
They're on free-to-air, Channel 2.
Does, in the afternoons.
Doesn't cost them a zack.
Well, hopefully there's some more time there for what the A-League, or what FFA can put together for the new round. But unfortunately, that's all for the show this week. Thanks very much for listening, and as always, if you go to the Near Post,
get there first.
Absolutely.
Get there first if it's for football news that you thirst. The Near Post, get there first. Get there first if it's for football news that you thirst. The Near Post, get there first. First, if it's for football news that you thirst, the Near Post, get there first. There first, if it's for football news that you